Apple cider vinegar is an old folk remedy, and folks, what's old is new again. Let's give a listen to Roger Fairchild from Fairchild's Organic Apple Cider Vinegar. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Roger, as the saying goes, all things old are new again, and certainly that pertains to apple cider vinegar. So with your expertise for many years now, can you just share a little bit about the history of apple cider vinegar, and then we'll move into what you've got going on?
Okay. Vinegar is derivative of a French word called sour vine, and people used to stomp on grapes and fruit and stuff, and they'd ferment it with natural yeast, and people consumed it. They've done that forever. The Roman centurions carried vinegar water in their canteens to keep from getting sick. John Adams, the second president, famously drank a cup of hard cider, hard vinegar, every day. And up through modern times, vinegar has been used mostly for preservatives, for canning, but it has long been a drink. People tell me that their grandfather or great-grandfather always took a glass of vinegar water every morning, but they don't really know why. Well, when you used to go to the mercantile store and draw it out of a barrel, or you made it on your own homestead, it was live. It had the bacteria and the enzymes and the phenols. But as we moved from the mercantile store to the grocery stores, supermarkets, Americans seem to want their food to be pretty.
Pretty and
I think we should be concerned about nutrition and the provenance of where this stuff comes from. But Americans are prone to want their food to be pretty, and the corporations that serve the supermarkets started filtering the apple vinegar and pasteurizing it. And in my opinion, it ruined it. Then companies like H.J. Heinz decide, well, we can make this a lot cheaper if we make white distilled vinegar out of ethanol and then put colors and artificial flavors in it. And they have a product called apple cider flavored vinegar. But about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, Patricia Bragg, who owned Bragg Live Foods, started campaigning to sell apple cider vinegar that was raw and unpasteurized like Grandpa used. And for 16 years, we served her, and her business grew under her indefatigable leadership and promotion and our very fine vinegar. It grew and grew and grew, and with the advent of the internet and the health consciousness, it's got to be quite an item. And we're back serving the product that John Adams and great-granddad used. Unfortunately, there's a countercurrent. We got corporate greed entering this category, and they're starting to do things like use concentrates and apples that have been on the ground and peels and cores from canneries and concentrate from China. And we have to be on the lookout for what is going on, because for apple cider vinegar to have its pluses, it can't be cooked, it can't be filtered, it can't be pumped under high pressure, which tears up the enzymes. There's a lot of digestive enzymes. There's a lot from the phenols that help your body, whether it's a human, a Cornish game hen, or a cow. The original old-fashioned stuff is, by the way, the most important product.
Right. Well, it's certainly wonderful that you are on the good track here. And I know that you've been working double time since you started making apple cider vinegar with your uncle in 1973. And I'm wondering, is the process to make apple cider vinegar basically the same as when you got started? And I'm not asking for any proprietary secrets, but can you share basically how it's made? And were you always making an organic product?
No. I tried back in the late 70s to make some organic product, but the market just wasn't there. Mostly the distributors were long-haired folks who were driving a VW microbus And they had no business sophistication. They had a good idea, but they were going broke faster than you could chase down your accounts receivable. I've always made conventional vinegar and apple juices. I got into the organic. I spoke to Mrs. Bragg. I served her for 16 years. We had a fleet of trucks. We had 10 semi-tanker trailers delivering vinegar to a bottling plant. She had three different bottling plants in California. But that relationship, as lovely as it was, is over because Mrs. Bragg, at the age of 90, retired. And the company's been taken over by a private equity firm. And so rather than whine about it, we just start building our own brand and label. Unfortunately, about the time we just rolled that out, the COVID crisis hit. Couldn't travel, couldn't get meetings.
We are going to get into what's going on now, but I'd like to get back into, since Patricia Bragg, you've been organic, and can you move into like how it's actually made without giving out the proprietary secrets?
Well, historically, apple cider vinegar was made the slow way. The first fermentation was from the sugars to alcohol using a natural yeast that's prevalent on the apple. And then the juice was separated, and then it was aged slowly in barrels for the second fermentation, which is bacteria fermentation, which converts the alcohol to acetic acid. The extraction methods have changed to, over the years, it used to be you wrap the apple pomace after it's ground up and in blankets, and then you had a big hydraulic ram that pushed it down and squeezed it out into a stainless steel tray. But now we use more sophisticated stainless steel wine presses that are like long tubes with an air bladder inside them. We also moved one step further, and we really think this is our secret. We process the whole apple. We do not use cores, peels, concentrates. Concentrates are apple juice that had been boiled down to make 7 gallons into one, and it was shipped across the oceans and reconstituted. We don't use any of that. But another thing we do different is we don't hammer mill the apple to an applesauce pulp and then squeeze the juice out and then ferment the juice. We ferment the whole apple, and we don't hammer mill it into a mush. We slowly mince it into chunks, and it takes longer, but it makes a much better product. People call ours the heavy vinegar because it's got a lot more of the contents. But other than that, it's pretty much the same as it's been for 1,000 years, other than a few mechanical adjustments.
Right. Now, how's the technology benefited you as far as time it takes? Have some of these innovations that you were just talking about created a shorter time to make it or not?
No, it actually, our process takes much longer.
Okay. Bravo.
Because haste creates shortcuts that denigrate quality.
Definitely.
And we want to ferment and get all the polyphenols and all of the lactic and all of the enzymes and such. You know, one of the reasons people went away from the second fermentation in the barrels is it was just too long and too expensive. We do our process in 50,000-gallon stainless steel tanks. And it takes us about 6 months to make a batch. There are people that are making it in as little as 30 days, but it shows.
Definitely it does.
Speaking of the 50,000-gallon stainless steel tank, I had the good fortune when I was in college. I went to college to be a basketball player, and I had a scholarship. But I discovered right away that even though I was a high school star, I was a mediocre college player. And then I got hurt, and I lost my scholarship, and so I went to work as a welder, worked my way through college as a welder, and I designed and built all these tanks here. It's kind of a strange stack of skills that led me to this point.
Yes, and it's funny looking back on life, isn't it, at this stage in the game where you go, oh, isn't that interesting that this is how it led me right where I am today, and fortunately so. You started to tell us about your customer base, and you've spoken about Patricia Bragg, and you started out early on, you knew there were farmers and ranchers that were interested in this stuff, and today you're back to that again, as well as human healthcare. The folks that are interested in that are coming around again as well. So tell us a bit about what people are coming for and what you've heard.
Well, I started in 1973 as an accountant, and my uncle was a hired manager of the business. Shortly after we started, about 4 years later, he died. And so I hear him at the age of 24 running a business, and I was doing sweet apple cider and vinegar for the grocery chains under their labels. And I told you I briefly tried to do organic vinegar, but there just wasn't a market had matured. But I had people coming to the plant wanting to buy raw, unfiltered apple vinegar. And I'd say, well, that's fine. What's it for? And they'd say, well, I feed it to my animals. And I thought, well, thank you for the business. I also had people come to my plant who were sick, cancer, and they'd tell me that they used this to help. They put it in their bath, and it helped pull the toxins out of their body and was very helpful for pain relief. And so basically those people, I just gave it to them because it wasn't a very big quantity and they needed it. Well, there came a time later after the Chinese imports of apple concentrate syrup destroyed the apple cider, apple juice business in the country. I had to start over, and I went and interviewed these people that were buying it for their animals, and they explained what it was doing. And then I did a market survey, and I quickly discovered there's more cows than people in this country. And I had enough money under my mattress that I could start another plant. And I started an apple vinegar plant with a three tanks, a vinegar generator, and a pickup truck and a horse trailer and a shovel. And I started selling animal vinegar. And it grew pretty good. When I first went out on the road to sell, I dang near starved to death. I was going to the big dairies. And they would always shove me off on their nutritionist. And the nutritionist always wanted a kickback. And I said, I'm not going to do that. I decided I'd go to the other end of the spectrum, and I went to the small dairies. Maybe it was the kind of people that had 40, 80 cows, and most of the cows had a name instead of an ear tag.
Right.
And those people would take the time to talk to me, and they also were out amongst their cows physically. So it was growing, but it's all gone corporate. Most of these cows never see a blade of grass.
Well, that's why we're doing this show, Regenerative Agriculture Focused, because it's a growing field, and I'm sure you must be feeling that, right?
Yeah. About that time, that's when Patricia asked me to produce for her, and I was busy as a one-armed paper hanger building tanks and driving truck and buying apples. And I put a lot of effort into it, and my energies in the animal feed business had waned because of this other opportunity. But now I know that you've interviewed Will Winter and Steve Campbell, and from their work, they're doing a better job at it than I have. But we can't run animals in confined operations where they live in their own manure all day, all their life. Never see a blade of grass. They're giving hormones and antibiotics as a prophylactic. You can't just give the whole herd antibiotics because that trickles down into the people who consume these products.
Right.
I don't like it at all.
No. Well, thank you for having a conscience in your business. And I'm wondering, do you have a favorite anecdotal story about someone who's been using apple cider vinegar, the good, raw, unpasteurized kind?
For animals or for humans?
Either one. What's your favorite story?
Well, I am not a doctor. I am not a scientist. I am probably one of the premier experts on how to make vinegar, and I have lots of anecdotal, but I want this disclaimer to be in there.
Of course.
Because the government will come, and even including veterinaries, the power of the government will come and crack your knuckles if they think you're practicing medicine.
Without a license, yes, sir.
So you probably run into this in the unpasteurized milk business.
Yes, exactly
right.
Well,
with that disclaimer, some people say that it's weight loss, but I'm 6'2" and 195 pounds. So maybe it's because I take a little honey and vinegar every morning. I can't speak to weight loss. But athlete's foot, toenail fungus, I soak my feet in a foot bath about once a week. I do vinegar, and the next weekend I do Epsom salts. I need to take care of my feet because I'm a type 1 diabetic. I know that it heals small wounds. If you're out working on machinery and the wrench slips and you scrape your knuckle real bad, take and pour this vinegar on it, and it stings, but it's an antiseptic. A lot of times a scraped up knuckle will heal, and then it'll get pussy underneath and the scab comes off and you got to grow another scab. If you wash it out immediately with vinegar, it's probably going to heal right the first time. I also use it personally. If I have an upset stomach, if I ate some food that just wasn't right and my stomach is screaming at me, I know that if I take a glass of water and mix in an ounce or two of vinegar, when you're in the bathroom wishing you had relief, your mind says, I don't want to drink vinegar. But if you'll just sip that, all of a sudden, about 30, 40 minutes later, you go, wow, that went away.
Nice.
My wife and I, we wash our vegetables, especially the ones from the store, in a solution of vinegar water. It's an antiseptic.
Yes.
There's a lot of claims made by other people who I'm a little dubious of, but I don't complain about it. I just tell people what I know. I get a lot of anecdotal evidence, testimony from other people. There's a lot of things that it does, but there's some things that are a little far-fetched. If you'll notice on our website, we don't make any claims that it cures everything. Our only claim is we make it out of the finest ingredient, giving you the strongest, best value, best quality we can. Now, I can also speak to the animals. In the dairy industry, there's a measurement that they have of called somatic cell count. There's
yes.
good bacteria and bad bacteria, but if you get too many somatic cell counts, if you get too many, that means you got a mastitis problem.
Right.
And if you're feeding your dairy cows vinegar, you can keep your somatic cell count in check. And that's kind of important because if you got mastitis, you have to milk the cow separately and dispose of the milk. And that's labor consuming and it takes production away. I've also had a lot of people tell me that any animal that's fed vinegar through their whole life does not have liver flukes. 90% of the livers of animals that are processed, the liver has these worms in them that bore little holes and makes scar tissue, and those things all end up in the dog food bin or the bin for feeding mink. Animals that are fed vinegar tend to not have flies bother them as bad. Their coats shine up. They don't seem to get pink eye and hoof rot. Now, what consuming vinegar has to do with foot rot, I have no idea, but it's pretty widely reported. So, as Senator Patrick Moynihan said famously years ago, that the plural of anecdotes is data.
Exactly. What a wonderful statement. Couldn't agree more. Yeah. One question going back to the processing, is there something that you really need to watch? Is there a temperature issue or timing?
Well, it's more art than science, and after almost 50 years of this, I've kind of conquered it. Timing is everything. And you do have to control the temperatures on the second fermentation. Bacterial fermentation, which is aerobic, that converts alcohol to acetic acid, is exothermic. We have these big cooling coils inside of the aerators that keep the temperature down. We try to run at 29 degrees centigrade, or about 90 degrees. If you let it get too hot, it will destroy the bacteria, and it will destroy the enzymes. And there are people in the industry who get infections of bad bacteria and nematodes in the vinegar, and the only way they can conquer it is to pasteurize it and filter it, which makes me livid that they do this, and then to dye it. But the temperature is absolutely critical on the second stage. The most important thing is use quality fruit. And the second most important is cleanliness. These products get moved from one tank to another about three, sometimes four times through the aging process. We pressure wash them and sterilize them, and all the hoses, all the pumps. We're proud to say that we pass our organic inspection without issue. We are third party audited. Food and Drug Administration has never had a problem with our plant, whether you're making it at home or whether you're making it in a factory. Cleanliness and the raw inputs, and then the patience to take the time to do it without rushing. You know, winemaking is considered a science and an art. We have two fermentations where a winery only has one. As you can tell, I'm pretty well wedded to this. I'm starting my 51st year in the vinegar business in March. Being a vinegar maker, I kind of get smacked down. It's like there's a giant wave running through the universe that is determined to push me in the vinegar business.
Good.
And if I try to swim away from the current, it just sweeps me back in.
We have a little bit of time left, so since Roger mentioned Will Winter, I thought I would air a little bit from an interview with him as well regarding apple cider vinegar. Will is a former veterinarian and co-founder of the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association.
We didn't know it was as good as it is because nobody told us. So I get this call from an organic dairy out in Idaho. They were having somatic cell count problems. And what that means is that the number of white blood cells in the milk was too high. There's a limit set by the government of how much you can have in milk. They're the good guys. The white blood cells are the fighters. They're the ones that kill germs. They kill pathogens. So you actually want white blood cells in your milk to kill Salmonella, Listeria, E. coli. All of the deadly pathogens can be destroyed by natural white blood cells in the milk. But if you have too many, that means you have mastitis with it, which is an infection of the udder. And these commercial dairy cows are banging out so much milk. They're on these hot rations that they only live about 42 months average in a commercial dairy, which is ridiculous. A good Amish dairy, they'll have teenage cows that they know by name, and they come in every day, they know the drill, they bang out a calf every year. But the commercial dairies, it's a torture chamber all from beginning to end. Again, I'm generalizing, I'm not saying they're all that way, but it leans that direction. So this dairy called me and they said, "What you got?" I always hate this because the pharmaceutical industry has given us a model of like you throw a drug at a problem. Oh my God, you got smallpox, you need this. Oh my God, you got TB, you need this. Rather than, well, why do they have TB? Why do they have brucellosis? Why do they have mastitis? So I got into all of that. Well, why do they have mastitis? Oh, they didn't want to hear that. They were very conventional. It's like, don't you have something? And finally, they gave me the ultimatum. They said, well, if you only did one thing, what would you do? Oh, well, that's easy. I'd give them apple cider vinegar. So this is a big dairy. They bought five totes of vinegar. A tote is 275 gallons. And I, as predicted, I never heard from them again. This was like in May. And out of the blue in August, this guy calls me and he said, "Hey, are you the vinegar guy?" And I said, "Well, no, I'm not the vinegar guy, but I'm the guy that sent you guys some." He had identified himself. And he said, "Well, we want to know what the biggest container of vinegar you can get is." And I just bust out laughing. So I said, "So it knocked out your somatic cell count and mastitis, eh?" And he said, "Oh," he said, "well," he said, "I don't know much about that." He said, "I don't know which end of a cow you put hay in. I'm an accountant. I'm the bean counter." And he said, "When we started giving your vinegar, our butter fat shot up from 3.1 to 3.9. We get paid on protein and fat in the milk, not volume. You could throw a garden hose in it and increase volume, but you can't increase fat or protein artificially." So he said, "We love that. We're making almost 25% more money on our milk." And he said, so he went out and talked to the herdsman and he said, "Was that that vinegar that did that?" And the herdsman said, nah, it just couldn't be vinegar. I was just giving them 4 ounces per head per day. So nothing works that good. So they quit giving it. Well, sure enough, within 2 or 3 weeks, that butter fat was banged down right where it had been before. So they started giving it again. Well, that dairy is very happy. It's organic dairy. They're herding by the semi-load now. Mm-hmm. And they will never quit giving vinegar. And that's a universal thing. What I've found is anybody that's tried apple cider vinegar, for whether it's chickens, pigs, horses, doesn't matter. They will never quit giving it. But once they see the coat slick up, once they see the parasites go away, the flies, the worms, the lice.
The flies was interesting to me, learning about that the flies go away after.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's a silver bullet for flies. You still have to have good manure management. The nasty flies breed in manure. And if you got cattle staying around in manure all the time, not even a feedlot, if you're not moving your cattle around or your sheep or your goats, they will have flies. And they also have worms, because the eggs come out in the poop. It turns into a larvae and they crawl up on the grass. Well, they can only crawl up about 2 inches. So if you overgraze your pasture, the animals are going to eat those worm larvae. Mm-hmm. And they're just never going to break that cycle. Now, the buffalo figured it out. They migrate. In fact, buffalo walk while they graze. And when they go to sleep at night, they're maybe 5 to 10 miles from where they were yesterday. So the animals never eat those eggs. So they never were plagued by parasites or flies. And in fact, buffalo hate flies. And that was one of the major causes of a buffalo stampede, is that they got flies on them. They would just run 40 miles an hour, 10 miles, and they don't have any flies anymore. The flies couldn't
perfect,
keep up with
them. Perfect.
Yeah. So nature has all these answers. And what we're doing in holistic medicine, as you might guess, is we're mimicking Mother Nature.
Right.
There's your answer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Will, what about us? I know that you had a very natural transition into learning so much about human health, of course, as you moved along. And I'm already convinced it will help humans with gut problems, taking apple cider vinegar. Can you expound on that just a little bit?
It's one of the primal ways to get your gut biome back into health. You know, Hippocrates, the father of Western medicine, they don't listen to him anymore, but he said all disease begins in the gut. If they knew that 5,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago, why don't they do it now?
Some great anecdotal and common sense advice and information from Roger Fairchild and Will Winter. For anything tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are where you'd hope to find them. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.